Thank you for listening and subscribing to the Brilliance Security Podcast. Hello, my name is Steve Bocut, and I am an editor for Brilliance Security Magazine. Brilliance is an online digital publication dedicated to the security industry. Our mission, and thus our name, is to illuminate the intersection of physical and cybersecurity. We cover both of these security domains by publishing original content about threats, hacks, products, and security strategies. We hope you will enjoy this podcast and visit us at brilliancesecuritymagazine.com. Welcome to the Brilliance Security Magazine podcast, and thank you for joining us today. We appreciate your listening. We've got an interesting guest with us today. Today, our guest is Ron Arden. Ron is the Executive Vice President, CTO, and COO of Fasoo. Fasoo provides unstructured data security, privacy, and enterprise content platforms that protect, control, trace, analyze, and share critical business information securely while enhancing productivity. Our topic for today is protecting and managing unstructured data. So before I bring Ron in, let me give you a little bit more information about him. Ron is responsible for operations, technology, and successful deployment of products and services to Fasoo's customers. He has over 30 years of strategic planning, marketing, sales, business development, consulting, and technical experience in the information technology and cybersecurity industries. Ron has held executive, management, and technical positions at numerous organizations, including Digital Equipment Corporation, Wang Laboratories, and Icon Office Solutions. With that, welcome, Ron. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Stephen. Nice to be here.
All right. Well, we really appreciate this. This is going to be a fascinating conversation. I've been looking forward to it. Let's start with giving our audience a little bit more information about Fasoo, what you do, how you fit in the industry, those kinds of things.
Sure. So you mentioned unstructured data. So let me define that first for those who don't understand it. Sure. So if you think about data, most people break it into two or three categories. Structured data is things that's in databases, so columns and rows. Unstructured data typically is everything else. It's usually just the files and documents we work with on a daily basis, whether it's Word, images, CAD files, whatever. That's typically what people refer to as unstructured data. Sometimes people think of something that they call semi-structured data, which might be I store a document into a repository like a SharePoint online. But I think for our purposes, that's really defined as unstructured data. It's files and documents. So what we do is we help customers protect, control, and trace sensitive unstructured data. So like I said, it's the documents we work with all day long. And we bill ourselves in a couple ways. We have what we call a Fasoo data security platform, which is a set of technologies that allows you to discover, classify, protect, trace, manage all of these different types of files, regardless of where they are. So the way we do protection is we encrypt files, and then we will provide what we call a dynamic security policy or access control policies for those files. And we also fit into a category of technology called data security posture management, which most people tend to equate with the cloud, but I think it's really for all data, regardless of where it is. And the point of DSPM is really to say, in my organization, I want to identify risks and vulnerabilities to my data. I want to implement proper security controls on that data, and I want to maintain visibility of that data regardless of where it is. So that's kind of what Fasoo does in a nutshell.
Okay. And you mentioned the cloud. And so there's probably part of that that you could help clear up in my mind. So is your solution, your platform, a cloud-based solution where I'm going to offload all of my unstructured data to you, and that's where in the cloud is where you're going to protect and help me manage it, or is it more of an application that I'm going to run in my infrastructure internally where your solution will help me manage, or is it both?
Well, it could actually be both. So we are not typically storing the data. We are just managing security policies around the data.
Got it.
And the services, you know, the FOSU services, you could, you know, we could provide that as a cloud service. It could be a SaaS or a managed service, or a company could run it on-prem. So we've got a couple of customers who have things like air gap networks where they can't go out to the cloud. And so obviously they have to run it inside their organization. And there are other people who just for security or other purposes, they want to run everything internally. But yeah, we're not storing the data. We're not like a box or something like that. Right. We're just managing the security around the data.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Yeah. So let's talk about the evolution of unstructured data. I know that it's changed greatly over the last couple of decades. So talk to us about that. Help us understand how things, that landscape has changed.
Yeah. So the biggest issues around unstructured data is it's everywhere and it's growing like crazy. One of the issues is that most companies don't know what they have and they don't know where it is. Right. And one thing that the cloud has helped or made worse, depending on your point of view, you know, I can go up to something like Amazon, and for me to spin up or provision new storage is a couple of clicks, and it's so cheap that people essentially don't care to manage it. And so you just got data growing like crazy. So that's the biggest issue. There's so much data out there. You just think about this. Every time you create anything on your endpoint or in the cloud, you've got another piece of unstructured data. So it's growing exponentially. It's in the cloud. It's in on-prem systems. It's in applications, you know, like a Salesforce. It's on your endpoint. It's on your phone. It's on your tablet. So it's everywhere. That's one issue. The second issue as to why it's growing is you've got duplicates and derivatives everywhere. So let's say I create a document and I email it to you and five other people. Now there's seven versions of this, and then you make a copy and on and on and on. And so now you've got, you know, this insane amount of data that you can't manage, and trying to determine where it is and what it is and if there's any sensitivity around it is a huge challenge.
Yeah, I can imagine that that's true. So obviously, FOSU is not the first ones to think about how are we going to manage and protect unstructured data. So what do you do differently? Or is there something that FOSU does differently that sets you apart?
So there's a couple of different approaches that vendors take to managing data. One is they will use what we call a location-based or perimeter-based type of solution, which if you think about it, I'm going to put, you know, a moat around my data. And it's usually location-based. So let's say I'm inside an organization. I have access control lists that will govern the ability to access a file on a server. Or I have a CASB product, which would allow me to control things that are in the cloud. The other approach, which is what we take, is we bring the security down to the file. So the issue with doing it in a location is what happens when I move it from the location? Well, all my security now evaporates. So it's not really an effective approach. And what I always say is people will play a game of whack-a-mole, which is they say things like, I want to prevent you from moving it to the cloud or to a USB or to something. And it's as if you can't win that game because somebody's going to figure out a way to get around it. So what we do is we focus on the file. And as I said, we encrypt files. We assign dynamic security controls to those files to then limit what users can do with the file. We also take it a little step further, which is there's a lot of other ways that you can exfiltrate data. Two of them are print and screen. A lot of people don't think about this, but if I just print something to a PDF, you know, I can now take it and I have no control over it. If I have sensitive data up on a screen, and it could be I'm in a call center and I've got, you know, PII or something sensitive, or maybe I'm in an environment where I've got CAD applications and I'm doing some kind of a VDI. So there's just a lot of stuff on the screen. Well, anybody could take out their phone and take a picture of it, and now you've compromised, you know, your data. So we protect screen, print, and all of these other areas. What we're doing at the file level is, as I said, we're doing encryption, but we're providing a dynamic security policy. So if you think about the world of security and data, you have data controls, data at rest, data in transit, and you have data in use. So data at rest, you know, everybody's got encryption on their hard drive, but you take it off the hard drive, you know, it's no longer protected. In transit, I've got, you know, SSL communication everywhere, so that's cool. But when I open up a document, I need to have some protections, because if I allow you to copy and paste something into a Slack channel or into an instant messaging app, you no longer have any control over that. So we're providing that level of control to all of these types of documents. The other thing that I think makes us somewhat unique, we have a very large set of file formats and applications that we support, including CAD applications. That's very important, obviously, in manufacturing. We support the ability to protect your source code, as well as, you know, your standard office documents and multimedia and things like that. The other two areas, which I think are very important for us, is there are a lot of companies who believe that the user of the data or the data owner should ultimately be in control of the security of that data. And at times that makes sense, but for some organizations, it makes no sense. And it makes more sense to do things centrally. You create security policies and users just work with their documents. And as they create and modify things, things get encrypted and protected and policies get applied. So centralized management prevents users from having to become security experts. And again, there's sometimes that makes sense, but sometimes it doesn't make sense. You just need people to do their jobs. And then the last thing I think that is also very important, which I think talks to the maturity of our platform, is what we broadly call exception management. So I don't care how diligent you are with your security controls, there's always got to be a change. Business changes, people move to different departments. So making it easy to apply exceptions to security policy is very important. And, you know, in our case, it's a user can right click and request a change, whether it's granting them additional permissions or exempting them from something like a watermark on a screen. Again, it's just, you need to be flexible and make it easy for the end users to be able to work.
Interesting. Well, I certainly like that approach where you protect the data regardless of where it's at. And a couple of times you kind of alluded to this. There's a phenomenon that I've noted that happens in security. It happens a lot. We find ways to secure things, but in doing so, we've hampered how people work, and we underestimate how creative they will get just to do their jobs. They're not doing anything nefarious, Absolutely. But they need to do their jobs, and they will come to all kinds of creative solutions to figure out how to continue to do their jobs. And so if we force them, they will, in so doing, bypass our security. So,
yeah, I mean, we always said that, you know, the perfect security is unusable. You know, it's a computer room. You know, it's pointless. Yeah. So, yeah, we're always trying to balance productivity and security. Yeah. Because, like you said, people are going to find a way around it. And then what's the point in having it?
Yeah. All right. So let's pivot just a little bit and maybe address the why question. So why being... Why the security? So what are some of the challenges, the security challenges associated with unstructured data? What threats are there?
Yeah, so if you think about what are people trying to do, there in the security world, there's really only two things. Somebody's either trying to disrupt your business or they're trying to steal your data. Okay, so we're focused on the steal your data part. And there's really only two reasons for data security. One is you want to protect your intellectual property, or you have to comply with privacy and security regulations, you know, like a GDPR or something like that. That's it. So we have somewhat of a simplistic way sometimes of looking at the world of data. And this is an oversimplification, but it's a good way to start. Think about, bifurcate your data into two and say it's either public or it's not. Okay, if it's not, I need to protect that. So the challenges are, how do you do that, as we talked just a few minutes ago, without impacting your security? So I need to look at the visibility or data lineage of all of my data. Data lineage is something that people talk about when they're talking about privacy more than I think intellectual property. But like I said, with all these derivatives and everything, I need to determine what I have and where it is. So that's a key security challenge. It's what do you have that's sensitive? And then what do you do to ensure that only authorized users are accessing it? The other issue that people have is trusted insiders, or what people call insider threat. So an insider threat is two issues. It's deliberate, or it's what I call oops.
Oh,
so, right. You know, how many times have you fat fingered an email address and you send it to the wrong person, or you copy something to a wrong location? So that's not malicious. That's people trying to do their jobs, and something gets out and now an unauthorized person has it. You also have a malicious insider who could, you know, they want to make a buck, or they want to hurt their employer, or, you know, whatever the issue is. So that's where I talked about earlier with what we call data in use protection. So if I use, let's say, full disk encryption on my endpoint, you know, then the document is encrypted. But as soon as I open it, I can do anything I want with it. I can copy paste. I can do, you know, anything with it. So to be able to protect against that and things like the screen captures and the printing, I think those are big issues. So what we try to do is guarantee through both authorization and access controls, I want to make sure that only an authorized user can access it. So I think those are some of the biggest data challenges people have.
Yeah, interesting. And as you were saying that, it just occurred to me that, and obviously anybody in security understands this, but a lot of times it's the oops and the malicious intent working together is what causes the real threat. So the oops is I forgot to protect this storage. Like you said, it's so easy to spin up a new storage container somewhere and I forgot to protect it. I just didn't click the right things. And now I've got this data out there that's not protected. Well, that's what a lot of the threat actors are looking for, right? Is an oops. They're looking for something that somebody did. They didn't configure it right. And so there's their opening. So those two work hand in hand all the time. So,
oh yeah. You've got, you know, most IT organizations are overburdened mm-hmm. and trying to keep up with patch management, you know, just all the basic hygiene. Yeah. It's really hard. And so yeah, it's not malicious. It's just oops.
Yeah. And mistakes will be made. That's what humans,
people.
Right?
We're exactly. people. Exactly.
And you also mentioned GDPR. I'd like to expand on that a little bit. GDPR, CCPA, compliance generally. I assume that that's part of your security rules. If you take whatever compliance issues the client has and build rules around that, or don't let me talk about your product. You tell us how you do it.
Sure. So there's two approaches, you know, that we have. One is that we can help you find data that is subject to regulation. So
okay.
PII, PHI, anything like that. So we have tools that will go out and do crawling of content and, you know, help determine what is sensitive and what is not, and then can take appropriate action, can tag it, put encryption on it, things like that. The other thing is, once you've got that, you know, the way we're protecting it is a number of the regulations talk about encryption. Like GDPR, I think, was the first one to talk about encryption. They're a little bit vague as to what encryption means, because as I mentioned earlier, you've got encryption at rest, encryption in transit, and then encryption or data in use encryption. Most of them are just saying encryption. So the assumption is if a document is encrypted and I move it somewhere else, I exfiltrate it, then, you know, I don't have an event. There's no privacy issues. But since we're controlling what a user can do with the file when it's open, and we require authentication and authorization each time, we can guarantee that only an authorized person can access it. So, you know, to be able to prove to a regulator that I know where my sensitive data is, here's how I'm managing it, and here's how I'm controlling its access, that's how you're meeting, you know, the variety of these particular regulations. And the other thing I always mention is most of the regulations, I think this started with HIPAA years ago, they said that if a piece of data is encrypted and it gets out and it's not in human readable form, that's not considered a breach event. So you really don't even have to go through breach notification. Now, I'm not an attorney, and I'm never going to tell a company not to do, you know, you got to check with your attorneys as to what a breach is. But that's something I've heard from attorneys. So if you think about just the point of view of preventing fines or preventing a regulator from dinging you, you know, going through this process and saying, okay, everything's encrypted, everything's controlled, I don't have to worry about it because I've met all your compliance.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate that clarification because I know sometimes I think the news media, and as a journalist, I feel entitled to talk about the news media this way, but we don't really do a service to the public because we don't clarify that sometimes. There's a breach, some data was exfiltrated. All right, well, was it really sensitive data and was it encrypted data? And those kinds of details don't always make the headline or even the body of the story. And so people are left with an impression that may or may not be totally accurate. So I appreciate that. Let's pivot again here. And so if I'm an organization and I'm interested in your solution, talk to me about how arduous it's going to be to integrate your solution into my existing infrastructure.
So I've got, you know, a lot of companies are looking at cloud solutions. And so all of our server-based components, the services, they can run in a cloud. It could be a SaaS, it could be managed, it could be their cloud, it could be our cloud. If it's on-prem, you know, we can run on pretty much any major operating system, any Unix, Linux, or Windows variant. So we'll just fit into whatever their stack is. We also will use an existing identity and access management system. So when people log into their computers, we're just picking up whatever credentials, you know, they have. It could be Microsoft Active Directory, it could be a SAML-based product, whatever it is. We're just essentially leveraging that authentication. So we're not doing the authentication. We're just saying whatever authentication system you have, you are being authenticated. And then you are telling our system, okay, this is Ron or this is Steven. And then beyond that, you know, all the communication between client and server is HTTPS. You know, it's just web-based traffic. So we're not going to violate, you know, firewall rules. Most people are passing that kind of stuff anyway. Our systems can all run in any kind of a virtualized type of environment, including, you know, AWS and Google and Amazon, and Azure. And so what we're trying to do is basically fit into an existing infrastructure, you know, as best we can. One of the advantages I think we have is, I'll go with the 80-20 rule. So 80% of our stuff is all UI based, but like most good configurable systems, you know, a lot of under the covers is XML. And I can go and I can change configurations inside XML to basically fit with any type of an infrastructure. We've had some of the most complex infrastructures you could possibly imagine with security. And given the flexibility of our platform, it's just very easy for us to get in there. And then on the endpoints, you know, there is an endpoint agent that's going to manage all of this, and any distribution process that any company has, you know, to deploy software, we can just fit right in.
Okay, excellent. All right. So everyone loves good use cases or success stories. So do you have any of those you can share with us, some examples? And, you know, you can protect, you know, your clients' names if you feel like you need to, but
yeah. Most of our customers don't like us mentioning their names.
That's the thing about security, right? Nobody. All right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you go to our website, you know, there's a number of success stories and use cases, but I'll give you a couple of examples. Some fairly broad, some fairly specific. So we have a couple of very large manufacturing companies that are global. There's one that's in the automotive parts industry, and their VP of engineering came to us and said at one point he felt like he was automotive U, because what was happening was they would train up engineers and then the engineers would walk out the door with all their CAD drawings and go to a competitor. So that was a key thing. They wanted to guarantee that all of their intellectual property, it was primarily CAD drawings and process type of information, was secured and protected. And this stuff is global. So we're doing that, and then we extended it beyond that to also kind of standard office types of documents. So that's we have a couple of companies that will meet that. We have another manufacturing company who's also extending that out to their supply chain. So they have a lot of subs who make components, and then they have to guarantee that when they share it with a sub, that sub cannot compromise it, share it with their sub, or, you know, potentially their competitor, the originator.
Yeah.
We had, I have a small company that's one of our customers in Texas, and they basically make like the razor blades for the oil and gas industry. So there's a lot of consumables that are part of that industry. And what they used to do was very, very interesting, because they have a lot of customers that are competitors, you know, in the oil and gas industry. So they'd be making components, and they color coded things in the manufacturing floor. And if company A executives were walking through, they would put a tarp over the competitor stuff to make sure that they didn't see brand names on it. So it's a similar thing like that, which is they use that as a marketing tool, because they could say to their customer, you know, ABC Oil Company, I can guarantee you that any specs you send us for us to make parts on your behalf isn't going to get to your competitor, and here's why. So those are a couple of interesting ones in the manufacturing field. We also have a couple of examples. One of our banking customers, they had a regulatory issue. So they have branches, as many banks do, in New York. And a couple of years ago, New York came out with what they called NYDFS, which was a data security privacy type of rule. Something similar to a CCPA, but, you know, very focused on the financial industry. And so what they had to do was guarantee that they could find, tag, manage, and control all of their PII. So we helped them with some of our tools to do that. And then another very specific example, we have a retail customer, and I'm not going to mention a name, but many of us have been in their stores. And if you go to purchase one of their products or services, it's very common that you're going to have to hand over a driver's license or maybe a pay stub if you're going to get some kind of a discount. And so what they do is they need to scan that PII, and it goes through a processing chain into an order processing process. It sounds terrible. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is, as soon as that information is scanned, it's turned into a PDF, and then it's encrypted with our technology. So it's kind of an inline workflow. And then by the time it gets to the processing people, you know, they open it, and they're very limited in what they can do. It's primarily just read that information. So those are just a handful of use cases and examples. Yeah.
I really like your example when you're talking about the supply chain, because we're so, in today's world, we're so dependent on the supply chain. We're sharing data with our supply chain partners all of the time. And as you pointed out, oftentimes our supply chain partners are also partners with our competitors, and you need to have some way to be able to protect that data, not only from threat actors, but from someone purposely sharing it with one of your competitors. So that's an interesting use case. I appreciate that. Well, let's ask you to dust off your crystal ball a little bit and look into the future. What do you see as far as future trends, or do you see any movement in a certain direction that you can share with us?
I think there are two things that are becoming big. Let me start with, you know, the one that everybody's talking about in the last year, which is AI. Mm-hmm. So when ChatGPT came around, you know, I think the world went nuts. And there's two issues that I see with that. One is that a lot more people are using AI, whether it's a public model or a private large language model, to generate content. Could be anything from code to marketing materials to who knows what. So you're just going to generate a lot more content, and you need to protect it. So as I've talked about, you know, we have ways to protect it and make sure it doesn't leak out of the organization. The other thing I think with AI is, especially with public models, is people are concerned about their intellectual property or regulated data getting up into the model, because I'm going to copy and paste, you know, a bunch of stuff as questions or prompts. And even though all the models claim that they don't keep that data for training purposes, I don't really believe that. I don't know, a lot of people do. I know they're getting better about it, but still there's a risk. So if your sensitive data in documents is protected, and we can control copy and paste, then I can't copy and paste that information up into the large language model. So I think those are things that are going to continue, and how this all plays out. You know, AI is changing like day to day, so we don't know. The other big thing I think is, I referred to earlier about data lineage. And I think in the world of privacy, this is going to become bigger and bigger. So give you an example that a friend of mine mentioned. He said, let's say he or a company signed a contract 5 years ago, and there's a whole series of copies and derivatives and related documents to that contract. And now the contract is no longer valid. Well, how do I know where that contract is? How do I know who has access to the contract? And how do I know if that contract is no longer valid? Should it be pulled out of circulation so that any sensitive data in there potentially couldn't be compromised? So if you think about this and all the things we talked about, where things could be in the cloud, things could be on mobile devices, they could be anywhere, how do I, as a company, figure out where that data is? And so to understand the lineage, which is all the derivatives and copies, and every time I did something to that file, where it is, how do I find it, how do I kill it, if you will, I think that's going to become a bigger and bigger issue. And part of that reason is because of what I said before, which is the cloud. You know, the cloud is like the cheapest thing in the world. Spinning it up, you know, another terabyte of data is nothing. So I think that's going to get worse and worse and worse as we go forward. And I think it's just going to start driving more security, hopefully Fosu security, to help address some of that.
Interesting, fascinating. So is there any specific advice that you could give our audience, you know, actionable things that they can do either in light of these future trends or anything that we've talked about today?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when we talk to companies, as I mentioned earlier, I consider two types of data. There's stuff that's public and there's stuff that's not. And so if you think about it like that and think about very simple use cases, think about where is the biggest risk in your company. So depending on who you are, you know, it could be HR, it could be finance, it could be R&D, it could be M&A, depending on the industry. And what I recommend is to look at simple protections for that type of information. So if you're an organization that needs to comply with, say, GDPR, well, probably most of that is in HR and finance. So think about simple protections. And the simple protections can be when users in those departments create documents, they are automatically encrypted, and they're encrypted with a security policy that's pretty open. So people can view, edit, print, do everything that they normally need to do. But if that data were to somehow leave the company, either deliberately or accidentally, you don't have any risk because the documents are unreadable. So I think that's a simple way to start. And then you can now, if you're a regulated industry, tell your regulators, okay, so anything that's sensitive, I can guarantee can't be seen when it goes outside the organization. So I've covered that piece. I've impacted very few people in the organization. I'm not preventing them from doing their work. And then as you start thinking about other areas in the business where it might make sense, you know, you can start expanding that. So maybe it's a department by department or division by division. And then if there are certain things you want to ratchet, you know, maybe there are things that are more sensitive, maybe only executives should see, or maybe there's only certain departments that need access to, you can start dialing up the security. So we always recommend start very slowly, get the basics done, and then, you know, progress as you need.
Let's see how it meets your needs. Excellent. Absolutely. Great advice. Thank you so much. But we are out of time, Ron, but I do want to end with kind of an open-ended question that I always like to end with. And it's the essence of the question is, what should I have asked that I failed to ask you? But the question is, what else does our audience need to know about either about Fosu or about protecting and managing unstructured data?
So I think that one of the other big areas, and we address this with some of our products, is redundant, obsolete, and trivial data, so rot. You know, and that goes back to the conversation we had before around everything is everywhere. But if you think about your data, and I'm doing a lot of this bifurcation of data, current data is probably information that people have worked with in the last year. And old data is beyond that. And different companies will have different timetables, but that's a pretty common thing. So if you think about the world of, can I determine what is old data, what is redundant data, and what is trivial, which means I don't really care about it. So if you think about trying to find that and manage it, again, we have products that will help you with that. That helps you reduce the problem. Because if you're only really worried about the current data, that might only be 20% of your data. And the other 80%, maybe what you do is say anything that's older than a year, I'm just going to automatically encrypt and put a basic policy on it. And I'm not going to worry about coming up with fancy rules to determine anything about it. I'm just going to say, yeah, I know that stuff's protected. So now my threat surface is a lot lower, and I don't really need to worry about so much of what I was terrified about when I first started the process. So I think those are things that I think people need to think about. The other area that I talk about is there's a lot of security technology that's out there. Firewalls, intrusion detection, DLP systems, a lot of things that focus on the movement of the data. And I'm never going to tell somebody that you should get rid of your security technologies, because all of them are there for a reason. But if you're protecting the file itself, then sometimes some of those other technologies are not as needed, because I don't need to worry about where, as you mentioned earlier, it doesn't matter where the document goes, it's always protected. So maybe I don't need as many of those layers, and it can sometimes simplify your security stack and your IT stack, because one of the problems with a lot of the technologies today is there's so many alerts, and trying to manage all the alerts, you know, just becomes noise. And so sometimes you stop listening. You know, it's like if you live in a city and you hear the garbage trucks every morning, you don't even hear it anymore.
Right.
So that's a way, I think, to maybe help simplify some of the IT and security operations in an organization.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Ron. Thank you for being with us today. I appreciate your time. This has been a fascinating conversation, and I'm sure our audience is going to love it.
Thank you, Stephen. I appreciate the time.
All right. And a big thanks to our listeners for being with us. Please remember to like and subscribe if you find this podcast interesting. And join us next time for another episode of the Brilliance Security Magazine podcast.